Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jamming you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with another UFC fight night. This week, we're in Des Moines, Iowa. That's right, the main event, Corey Sandhagen versus Deiveson Figueiredo. And the co-main event, Rainer DeRitter versus Bo Nickel. That's right, some pretty good fights coming to you from Iowa. I mean, come on, why can't we come to Minnesota? We're going to Iowa, for goodness sakes. Not to hate on any of my Iowa people. I love you all, but I mean, come on, bring some UFC to Minnesota. I'm going to be very selfish in that. So we'll be dropping our predictions for every single fight and discussing what we think will happen in each of them on today's episode. As well, we're going to be giving an official review of You Season 5. That was right. The hit Netflix series has come to an end. How did it end? Was it good? Was it as good as the previous seasons? We'll have to discuss it all later on today's episode. As well, we're checking in with the NBA and NHL as their playoffs continue to roll along and looking at a couple new UFC fights and updated UFC rankings. But yeah, guys, I have 10 days as I'm recording this. 10 days left in college. By the time it's uploaded, I'll have 9, I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's insane. It's pretty surreal. And, you know, some people say, like, oh, it goes by fast. And you could say it went by fast, but I could also say, like, oh, high school went by fast. And that was, 4 years ago? So I think it's just all how you perceive time. And I think I have lived my college experience to the fullest. I've encompassed everything I can, and I've left a lasting legacy here at Minnesota State Mankato. But we're not here to be all, oh, Zachary, everything's ending. Now we're here to talk about some fun stuff. So let's get right into it. With our new UFC news, we only got 3 new fights, but the rankings did update. So we'll talk about those 3 fights, and then we're going to discuss the current updated ranking. So first off, UFC Atlanta going down to Atlanta, Georgia, June 14th, has its first or second, I think, third matchup besides the main event between Kamaru Usman and Joaquin Buckley announced. And that is a welterweight matchup between Michael Chiesa back in action following his win over Tony Ferguson as he takes on Court McGee. If I'm not mistaken, Court McGee submitted Tim Means last time out, I want to say in October. Perhaps, but hey, this is a good matchup. I love when they have the aging welterweights face each other. Court McGee is 40 years old. Michael Chiesa is 37 years old. So this is a perfect matchup to make in the men's welterweight division. Michael Chiesa has some potential to maybe make another run. Court McGee doesn't have any. I think this is a good matchup. I do favor Michael Chiesa in the grappling realm and probably getting another submission. But hey, honestly, not that bad. I don't know where these guys are from. You know, Michael Chiesa, I don't think is from Georgia. He could be. And Court McGee, I'm pretty sure, is from Salt Lake City, Utah. So we'll have to see what happens with all that. Another fight for you, UFC Vegas 107, going down May 34th, lightweight division, as Jordan the Monkey King Leavitt is back in action. He's taking on Kurt Howlebo. Kurt, you know, won the Ultimate Fighter season 31 somehow. Did that at, what was he, like 40? No, he wasn't 40, he was like 34, 35 or something. Amazing that he's still going. And as for Jordan the Monkey King Leavitt, I mean, this guy, he's always just been like a fight out. Like, he'll always just lose, like, a random fight. Like, he'll get a big win, and then he'll lose to Paddy Pimblett. Then he'll get a decent win, then he'll lose to Chase Hooper. So, this is a fight for Jordan Leavitt to really get back on track. If he does lose to Kurt, I mean, I might cut the guy, for goodness sakes, but, I mean, decent fight. And then our last fight that we have official, UFC 315 in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, May 10th. Daniel Santos is stepping in to replace Gavin Tucker, taking on Jiang Lee. And Jiang Lee is otherwise known as the Korean Tiger. Absolute killer. I love this kid. As for Daniel Santos, you know, he's 2-1 in the UFC. Wins over John Castaneda and Johnny Munoz Jr. This is just another opportunity for him to showcase his skills going down the featherweight division. This could be competitive. I can't remember who Jiang Lee lost to last, but I think it was a tough split decision, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to scope that out more as we get closer to that event next week. But hey, for a fight on the prelims as it's going to be, it's not too bad. So I would not hate on this fight too much if I was anyone. That is all of our officially announced fights. Now, I did mention the rankings were updated, so let's look at those briefly. Women's bantamweight division, Jocelyn Edwards, with her dominant win over Chelsea Chandler, moves into the number 14 spot. Chandler's at 15. They bump Melissa Mullins from the rankings. Jacqueline Cavalcante passes Misha Tate from 12 to 11. Misha Tate has a fight coming up with Deanna Santos, actually, on today's card we're going to be discussing. Jacqueline, I want to say, has a fight booked against maybe Nora Cronulli or Carol Rosa. I don't really know. But Jocelyn Edwards, now ranked at 14. Sky's the limit for her. I think pretty much anyone above her, she should take on. And as for Chelsea Chandler, I'm honestly surprised she's not cut. But hey, you know what? They'll keep her around. We'll see how she does. Women's flyweight division, no changes. And women's strawweight division, no changes. Jacqueline Amorim getting disrespected, not in the rankings at all. So you know what? Let's give her anyone in the bottom 10. Bottom five of the top 15, Jacqueline Amorim can take on. But I mean, Tisha Pennington passes Luana Fanero from 15 to 14. Like, that's the only change. Like, but why did we even do that? I don't know if any of them are even fighting. Seems a bit ridiculous. We are going to discuss Jillian Robertson and Marina Rodriguez. That's a 12 versus 9 matchup player today. That one's going to be very interesting in the division. But other than that, no changes. No changes in the women's pound for pound. Men's heavyweight, no changes. And honestly, no updates. No updates at all. I mean, what are we doing? I'm a little worried that we're moving towards Tom Aspinall, Ciryl Gane, and John Jones legit might retire. Like, he became the longest reigning heavyweight champion of all time, and he has one defense. One defense. That says a lot. That truly says a lot. Let's move into a actually fun division, light heavyweight. Zhang Mengyang now debuts at 14, Alonzo Menifield at 15, Anthony Smith booted from the rankings. And Zhang Mengyang, I mean, gotta love the guy. 18-3, all of them finishes. Might be 19-3 with all of them finishes, honestly. Or 19-6, I think. Zhang, I mean, I'm really liking a Volkan Ozdemir matchup, a Nikita Krylov matchup right there in that 10-9 range. I think that's fantastic. Lonzo Menifield bumped down to 15. We can do whatever we want with the lads. We can fight someone in the rankings, someone outside of the rankings. He's honestly just a wild card. How about Lonzo Menifield, Ebo Aslan? I want to see that fight. Or Lonzo Menifield versus Ian Kutalaba. I like both of those fights. Men's middleweight division is where the next updates take place. Abus Magomedov debuts at 15 in the rankings. Roman Kapilov is bumped up to 14 as Michel Pereira goes bye-bye. That's right. Abus, good win for him over Michel Pereira. He's now at 15. I think the winner of Bo Nickel and Rainer Day Ritter, if it's Rainer, you could do that. Maybe even the loser of that. But I also really like a Paulo Costa matchup. But that's kind of what I want more for Ikram Alkhasarov. So we'll have to see, but good for Abus. You know, they can always matchmake him with Roman Kopilov. There's a lot of things to work around with right there. Men's welterweight division is what we were waiting to see. And lo and behold, Ian Garry passes Joaquin Buckley from 7 to 6. Ian Garry now ranked number 6. And what to do with him? I think it's Leon Edwards. I believe it should be Leon Edwards. Now, obviously, Buckley's taking on Usman. You got Shavkat, Brady, and Garry. Now all waiting in the wings. I think Edwards is another great opportunity. Because if he and Garry can get past Leon Edwards, which is honestly like just the older version of himself, I think then you could give him a title shot. But for some reason, he's the backup fighter for UFC 315. How is that not Sean Brady? Like, that actually makes no sense. I have no words for that. Lightweight, not only do we have no updates in the rankings, we have no new news. We've got Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier. That's what we've gotten, and I'm not really going to consider that rankings-wise, because that is not a rankings fight. That is just a legendary fan service fight and an excellent way to send out Dustin Poirier. So yeah, no new updates on the title picture there. Featherweight division, some interesting moves, and it's actually going to be the final thing we discuss, as David Onama debuts at 14 with his win over Giga Chikadze. Giga's booted from the rankings. Dan Ige's bumped up to 13. Yusuf Salal up to 12. I'm curious to see how we match make all of those people, because you obviously got Gene Silva at 11, and I think he's going to get a bit higher of a fight than Josh Emmett at 10. I think someone like Brian Ortega is going to be taking on someone like Yusuf Salal. Dan Ige could take on maybe Aljamain Sterling. I'm not even liking that matchup. So there's a lot of things you could do. I know Dan Ige was even calling out Patricio Pitbull. That could be a fun fight. But congrats to David Onama. I mean, truly, if you'd have told me after the Nate Landry fight, this guy would be ranked, I'd have been a bit hesitant. And now looking where he's at, feel so happy for him. So David Onama, love you. I'll always be rooting for you. I'm happy to see what the future entails for David Onama in the men's featherweight division. But that is all the updates in the men's rankings and the new UFC fights. That is all we got in that realm. But we will be talking more UFC on today's episode. Let me cover the fights. Now let's get into just a brief little look at the NBA and NHL and a little joint analysis here. So NBA, we have a couple updates. So for starters, let's begin at the top of the West, as we always do. We have the Thunder and the Grizzlies. And yes, Thunder swept 4-0. It was a dominant victory. The Grizzlies did make it kind of close in game 4, but nonetheless, no match for the Thunder. This is no surprise. Thunder are in the quarterfinals. Yeah, no shocker there whatsoever. Grizzlies had no dogs. Thunder have insane chemistry. They're actually, like, win-loss record, they are 67-15. They are one of the best teams in NBA history. They should be one of the historic teams we have in NBA 2K, the franchise. So, great stuff for them. Nuggets and Clippers, who will they be playing? Nuggets picked up a pivotal victory yesterday, 131-115. They will take a 3-2 lead to their home in Denver for a game 6 that will be going down Thursday, May 1st. I'm predicting the Nuggets to win that. So I'm thinking the Nuggets are going to continue to cruise. But that was a team effort in that game 5 victory. I mean, Kawhi and James Harden shut down. You got Aaron Gordon dropping 23. Michael Porter, 14. Nikola Jokic, 13. Jamal Murray, 43. And Russell Westbrook, off the bench, 21. I gotta love Russ. You gotta love Russ. Give Russ some credit. We absolutely love Russell Westbrook around here. Now, moving on to the 3-6 matchup. T-Wolves up 3-1 over the Lakers at a 6 over the 3. Come on. Come on, baby. Bring it home. Now, we are going to LA, I believe, for the next matchup. So, fingers crossed, things can get going, but I'm confident the Timberwolves can make it to the next round. I'm really happy. I'm really psyched with what's been going on at the Timberwolves. They've been playing so good. You get game 6 Friday. It's going to be phenomenal. And the last matchup in the West, the Rockets and the Warriors. Warriors up 3-1. Warriors 3-1 as a play-in team. We freaking called it. We know ball. We know ball around here, okay? Holy cow. Super pumped for that. Now, Rockets do have a chance on, I think it is today, actually, as I'm recording this, Wednesday, the 30th, that they have a chance to make it 3-2. If not, they're going to lose. The Warriors are going to advance. So, in the West, big shocker there, probably with the Warriors over the Rockets. I mean, a 7 over a 2 will always be big, but now with the play-in, it kind of adds a specialer element when an 8 or a 7 team wins. Moving into the East, Celtics and Magic. Magic were able to win one game before dropping game 5, 120-89. So, yeah, Magic, you got a playoff win. You know what, you could say that much for yourselves, but Celtics, to no one's surprise, are going on to the next round, and probably, to no one's surprise, will make the NBA championship again. Maybe even win it, but no surprise there. Now, I'll tell you something else that was a bit of a surprise. The Pacers beating the Bucks 4-1, and Game 5 ended in just this insane thing. 17 seconds left. 17 seconds left. The Bucks are up. The Bucks are up. You know, Tyrese goes to the line, makes a free throw. Actually, I think it was 5. They were up 5, and Tyrese made 2 free throws. Maybe it was an and-one or something. Anyways, it was 4-point lead, 17 seconds left. Inbound the ball, you know, they foul, they go back and forth, Pacers make a shot, and then finally, they're up one, and they just got it inbound, and they inbound it, and they're passing it around, and they're throwing it, and oh, is there going to be an 8-second violation? Then no, they throw it to the far side of the court, Gary Trent Jr. catches it, it slips, bounces off, and falls out of bounds with roughly 10 seconds left. They inbound. Tyrese Haliburton drives up the court, drives to the basket, makes a game-winning layup with a second left. The heave isn't even close. The Pacers advance. And then Tyrese Haliburton's dad is pressing Giannis Antetokounmpo. Oh, they got some dogs in Indianapolis. I can't even lie. It was pretty good to see. Pacers will advance to take on the Celtics. If there's a team that can upset the Celtics, ooh, I feel like it could be the Pacers. That is very, very exciting. Now, to our 3-6 matchup. The Knicks had a chance to clinch, but they couldn't do it. That's right. The Pistons hang on 106-103 in an overtime heater. They win 3. They're now alone. The Knicks now lead 3-2, but we will get a game 6 on Friday. Actually, Thursday. I think they're going to run it back May 1st. I think they're going to do that. But yeah, Knicks, Pistons. Knicks are currently up 3-2. It's been a fantastic series. That does feel like a game 7 type of series, if you're asking me. We'll see what happens there. And then lastly, yeah, Cavs and Heat was actually just atrocious. The Heat actually got blown out 51 points in game 4. So if you thought the Grizzlies and Thunder series was bad, we'll just go check out the stats from the Cavaliers and Heat. So Cavaliers, Celtics, Pacers, and the who was I talking about? The Thunder. Those are the teams that are currently advancing. So we do have a couple series left to wrap up. Obviously, Warriors, Rockets, T-Wolves, Lakers, Knicks, Pistons, and Nuggets, Clippers. But we'll see. All those games can end in, or all those series, I can say, can end in the next game taking place. Now, moving from balls to pucks, let's check out the NHL real quickly. Top of the line, Jets and Blues, 2-2. Jets and Blues are tied 2-2. Jets are up 2-0. Blues tied up 2-2. You know, Blues have a ton of momentum right now. Blues are just riding a ton of momentum. They came in with momentum. And the Jets, honestly, I think started out kind of hot, kind of like got over their head. And then they went back to St. Louis, and nothing's been really going well for them. So now we're back in Winnipeg for Game 5. We'll see if the Jets can get something going. But hey, 2-2 right now, anyone's game as of right now. Moving on to who they could potentially play, as I try to remember, Avalanche and Stars. So Dallas currently leads 3-2. There is a potential game-winning matchup going down tomorrow, May 1st. Dallas, you know, I thought the Avalanche were going to do it. Avalanche, I think, went up 2-1, and then the Stars have just been on a little roll. And, you know, after coming into the playoffs on a 7-game losing streak, they've been able to swing things around, and hey, it's 3-2. We'll see what they do, but if Dallas advances, then NHL 25, EA Sports, was correct, because it predicted the Stars and Senators when I did a little sim, and I was like, yeah, there's no way that happens, but hey, what do you know? The other matchup, the Wild and Golden Knights, yeah, Wild subs just suffered terrible losses, back-to-back, just terrible losses. So Vegas is up 3-2, you're going to get a little Game 7 action Saturday, Game 6 action Thursday. I don't even know if we're going to Game 7. Yeah, Wild. Minnesota Sports, choking as always, but hey, we can't have the Wild and Timberwolves. Someone had to go. Who will they be playing? Oilers or the Kings? And right now, Edmonton's up 3-2. We'll see what happens. It's been good so far. I think we're getting to Game 7 in that franchise, the matchup, whatever you want to call it, but I'm still going to ride with the Oilers. We're riding with the Oilers. I didn't even realize they made it to the Stanley Cup last year. I learned that last night, so now I'm even more confident in my Oilers prediction to advance. Moving to the East, you have the Capitals and Canadiens. They have a Game 6, Game 5 actually coming up. They got Game 5 coming up today. Capitals are up 3-1. I'm predicting they're going to clinch that. The Canes haven't offered too much. They make it kind of scrappy, but you're not beating Ovechkin this year. This is one of the best years you've ever had from Alexander Ovechkin. Lightning and Panthers. Panthers are currently up 3-1. That series could also end today. And then with the way the Lightning have been playing, I honestly feel like they will. I thought the Tampa Bay Lightning were way better than they were. Panthers got some dogs on their team. That is right. I think the Panthers will probably win Game 5 and close out that series. Also, Devils Hurricanes. Devils made yesterday's game insane and went to second overtime. Hurricanes actually started the game out down 0-3, tied up. Devils drop 4. Hurricanes make it 4-4. We then go 2 straight periods. We go the entire third and the first overtime without score, and the Hurricanes finally win it. So the Hurricanes have advanced. They are the only team so far to advance in the NHL playoffs, which I find absolutely incredible. It just shows how action-packed it's been so far. And then lastly, the Maple Leafs and the Senators. You are watching the Maple Leafs choke in the playoffs right now. They are 3-2 now after being up, I think it was, what, 3-0 or something? I don't know. But the Senators and Maple Leafs, they have a Game 6 coming up. The Senators looking to send it to a Game 7. Will they? I don't know. Honestly, they might. They honestly might do it. I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. But yeah, we're still going to pick the Maple Leafs to win, but Senators are just dogs. They just got dogs out there. I've been using that word over and over. There's a lot of dogs. NHL playoffs have been fantastic. Far better than the NBA. Let me tell you that. And what else will I tell you? All right, let me tell you about You, the hit Netflix series. Yes, everyone, the final season of the hit Netflix series You has officially commenced. And yes, I did watch it all in one day. I couldn't help myself. I really did want to, but I couldn't help myself. I just loved Joe Goldberg so much. I don't love that he's a serial killer, but I do love the show to its extent. And season 5, I do think it was better than season 3. But honestly, season 1 and season 2 are so perfect. I mean, I never really liked, like, season 3 and season 4, they had amazing plot twists, they had amazing, like, Joe getting away at the end, but it just never really hit the same as the first two seasons. I think the first season is just so perfect. The season 2 honestly complements it really well, but season 5 was, it was a good wrap-up. I will say, spoiler alert, I did not like the woman, the girl, the interest to Joe this season. I think that is one of the main issues, and I'm not trying to be mean. I don't even think it's, not that she, like, wasn't the prettiest girl. Like, honestly, from Beck, like, it kind of went Beck, Love, it's kind of gone in order downwards, I could even argue, honestly, as I think about it. And I just think she was annoying, and the fact that Joe is taken down at the end, I liked. What I didn't like is they just bring Marianne back like it's nothing. They then have, oh my gosh, whoever Joe's wife was in this season. Oh my gosh, I'm mind blanking so hard on the name, but whoever she was, she survived the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever seen. She was shot, she was stabbed, she was left to burn in a basement. She somehow just comes back alive. That was ridiculous. There was a moment where, what's her name, Bronte, she's being choked out, like Joe literally drowns her. Like, Joe is holding her down until she's not moving, and she just appears later and shoots him. It didn't really work for me. It had a very, you know, it had a very good ending. You know, basically just like, oh, a serial killer gets what he gets. Like, all these women, they're all survivors. And then it kind of ends with Joe in prison, and he's talking about how he's all alone. And he basically blames the reason he's doing all this and the reason he's gotten away on us. And I guess that's the theme as it ends with him looking at the camera going, the reason I'm still doing this is because of you. And that's how it ends. So I think, you know, I've seen worse endings. It wasn't that bad. And certainly not killing him sets up spinoffs of the future, such as with his son, Henry. They could do a Dexter New Blood type of thing with you. But for now, it's concluded. You honestly could have had it gone on forever. But nonetheless, it happened. It was over. It's a very good series. I'd say overall as a series, it's like an 8.8 out of 10 series, I really think. Because almost all the episodes leave you wanting more. I think that is something that I really look for in a show. So that's just something to really take into account while you're watching this. If you haven't seen You before, please go check it out. But season 5 was super good. It's hitting over 10 million views in the first 4 days of its launch, which is utterly incredible. It has been incredible. You know, the audience engagement is lower than season 4, but that'll happen with Netflix. That is expected with Netflix because Netflix tends to do this thing where they take over a year to drop a next season, and it just drags out for so long. It just becomes like exhausting. The split last season, I kind of liked how they split the series, and as for season 5, they just released all episodes at once. It's all right. 89% Rotten Tomatoes, 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb. You kind of get the program, but yeah, super good. Kate, that was the lady name of his wife this season. So if you don't know, something does happen to her, but doesn't end up dying. So You season 5, please go check it out. Please let me know. I'd love to talk about it. There's definitely deeper themes at work, but I don't know. It's not that I like what Joe Goldberg does, but I mean, just the things he does and what he gets away with. It's just something about a character get away with sneaky things that has always spoken to me. So go check out You season 5. It's pretty intriguing, and it gets a thumbs up from Zachary. Actually, we'll give it two thumbs up from Zachary, but I don't want to delay anymore. I'm super excited for the card this weekend, so let's dive right into our UFC Des Moines predictions. I just can't wait, guys. I can't wait. I'm so excited. What can I say? But yeah, let's get on into it. Kicking us off, women's flyweight action. And hey, you know, sometimes we criticize the women, but look at Jocelyn Edwards, Chelsea Chandler. We got a round one knockout last time, so I won't try and jinx it here. Juliana Killer Miller back in action against Ivana Petrovic. Juliana Miller, 4-3. Didn't know that at all. 4-3. Ivana, 7-2. 5'8 to 5'7. Ivana's got 1 inch in height, and she has 4 inches in reach, 70 inches to 66. Southpaw for Ivana, orthodox for Juliana Miller. And Ivana, minus 230 is the favorite. At plus 190, Juliana Miller is the underdog. Juliana, 28 years old from San Diego. All four of her wins have came by finish, actually. One knockout and three submissions. She's been knocked out once in her career. The other two are decisions. She last fought on August in 2023, but she did have a fight scheduled in February against Carly Giudice. I don't even know if that was last year or this year, but nonetheless, it was scheduled. I don't know if it's just been inactivity or something, but she won the Ultimate Fighter, beating Brogan Walker, and then drops a decision to Veronica Hardy, then gets TKO'd by Luiana Santos last time out. So Juliana Miller, don't really know what she's doing, but a 4-3 record in the UFC is not really going to keep you around long, so we'll see if she can pick up a win here, but I just don't really know. 28 years old, she's still kind of young to an extent. We'll have to see. Her opponent, Ivana Petrovic, the favorite, 30 years old from Norway. 6 of her 7 wins have came by finish, 3 knockouts, 3 subs, and her 2 losses were both decisions. She debuted in July of 2023, dropping a decision to Luiana Carolina. She would then submit Liang Na in April of last year, and most recently in November, dropped a split decision to Jamie Lynn Horth. Look, I don't know much about either of these women, but Ivana Petrovic, I thought she was better looking, not to pull that card. She's also from Norway. She won a championship in whatever promotion she was fighting in last. We're going with Ivana Petrovic. It does boil down to also that Juliana Miller hasn't fought in like 2 years almost, so I think she's going to be a bit rusty when she gets in the octagon. I could even go, you know, Ivana, I guess, has had 3 knockouts, 3 subs. I could see a round one finish. Round one finish for Ivana Petrovic. I don't know which way. If I had to pick, I'm just going knockout, but I really hope there is to keep the streak alive of getting knockouts. That would be really, really fun. Moving on up to the men's heavyweight division. How about that? From the second smallest division in the UFC to the biggest, we get some heavyweight action as Thomas the Train Pearson, it's actually the worst nickname ever, takes on Dontell Lord Kong Mays. Thomas 9-3, Dontell 11-8 with a no contest. 6'6 to 6'1, 5 inches in height for Dontell. He also has an outstanding 7 inches in reach, 81-74. Southpaw for Thomas, orthodox for Dontell Mays. Thomas is the minus 265 favorite. Wow, at plus 215, Dontell Mays is coming in as your underdog. Let's start with Thomas, boys. Gotta love me a little Thomas Pearson, 30 years old, from Webster, Minnesota. He actually grew up in Farmington, Minnesota. How about that? Absolutely love that. 8 of his 9 wins have came by finish, 7 KOs, and 1 submission. And of his 3 losses, he's been knocked out twice. He's currently sitting at 1-2 in the UFC, and I kind of just observe his trajectory into the UFC. You know, gets a win on Demis Kinnaird series, really run-of-the-mill grappling, was facing a really bad guy in Chandler Cole. Then Jamal Pokes kind of just outstrikes him. Really does. He then takes on Muhammad Usman, gets an upset win using the grappling late in the rounds, and then takes on Shamil Gaziev, and it was close, but the thing is, Shamil Gaziev is the greatest unranked fight. Like, Shamil Gaziev is not going to go far in the UFC, but he is going to beat every single unranked guy they put him up against. So, unfortunately for Thomas, he ran into a little Shamil Gaziev. Bound to happen, but I honestly think he's good. You know, he's been really leaning on the ground and pound. I've noticed that. So if he can take down Dontell Mays, I think that's where he'll find his success. But other than that, I do kind of like Thomas Pearson. Plus, we didn't pick John Castaneda last week, and I know he didn't win, but we didn't pick him. So I feel like we almost have to pick Thomas here because he's from Minnesota. But his opponent, the underdog, Dontell Mays, 33 years old from New Mexico. 7 of his 11 wins have came by finish, 4 knockouts, 3 subs. He's only ever been finished 4 times in his 8 losses, 1 knockout and 3 submission losses. Now, he is on a 2-fight losing streak. You can even observe he's 1-3 in his last 4. He's 2-4 in his last 6. And yeah, it's been a very lackluster run through the UFC. He actually had 3 fights on Davis Contender Series because no one wanted to sign him. You know, he's fought some notable guys. Ciryl Gane, Rodrigo Nascimento, Augusto Sakai, Andrei Arlovski. He actually knocked out in 2023. Kyle Machado, he last beat in April, and then in August, he lost to Shamil Gaziev, and in February, he got heel-hooked by Walter Walker in just over a minute. So, not coming in with the most momentum. I'm thinking that Thomas Pearson gets a run-of-the-mill heavyweight decision, uses his grappling to beat Dontell Mays, but this is a, if it's on the ground, give me Thomas. If it's on the feet, I'm going with Dontell. And as we mentioned, the height and the reach advantage for Dontell Mays, it's really going to take Thomas Pearson landing the takedown, getting a ground and pound, even a submission to really make this a difference. So if Thomas is going to do anything, he's going to close the distance right away. Because we saw what happened with Andrei Arlovski. Dontell's got those long arms. He throws that overhand, clips you. You can go out even if your lights aren't out. So we're going to go with Thomas Pearson, riding with the Minnesota boy. I'm going decision, but anything can happen. From the heavyweights to the bantamweights, we got the return of the off-brand Topura, Gaston the Dream Killer Botlanos, as he takes on Quang Bang Lee. Gaston minus 140, Quang Lee plus 120. Oddsmakers have this one fairly close. 8-4 for Gaston, 8-2 for Quang Lee. 5'7-5'6, 1 inch in height for Gaston. 1 inch in reach for Quang Lee, 70-69. Orthodox stance for both of our gentlemen here. Gaston Bolanos just kind of looks like Iatopura. That's why people call it off-brand Iatopura. 32 years old from Peru, but now actually lives in California, which is where he trains. 6 of his 8 wins have came by finish. I believe they're all knockouts, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they're all knockouts. And of his 4 losses, he's been finished 3 times, twice by KO, once by sub. So as of right now, he's 1-2 in the UFC, wins over Aaron Phillips, and most recently, Cortavius Romeos in November, and his 1 loss is to Marcus McGee, which isn't too bad. That's not too bad. You know, the Cortavius win, he really humbled Cortavius. Cortavius was the favorite in that one, making his debut, and Gaston really needed that win to remain relevant in the UFC, so he got the win last time. We'll see if he can do it this time as he takes on Quang Bang Lee, 33 years old, born in Vietnam, but now he lives and trains in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. That's literally like 25 minutes from where I live. 20 minutes even. I used to actually see a girl in Brooklyn Park. She was a word that my mother would not like if I called a woman that. No, she kind of messed me around. But anyways, that's a different story. Quang Lee, 2 KOs and 3 subs, so 5 of his 8 wins by finish. And unfortunately, Quang Lee is 0-2 in the UFC and was actually knocked out last time in November. So, you know, I do want to point out he had to take on Zhao Long, who was a killer prospect last time out in China. And before that, short notice against Chris Gutierrez, we just saw Chris beat John Castaneda. We know he's pretty good, so I don't want to hold it too much against Quang Lee. Quang Lee is a Minnesota boy, but just because he's from Brooklyn Park, I don't think I want to pick him. I think I want to pick off-brand Itopira and Gaston Bolanos. So I'm actually going to go Gaston Bolanos to get a victory here. I think it could be, you know, I think you're going to see striking and grappling for both these guys. It's going to be a run-of-the-mill prelim, whatever you want to call it, prelim decision. Yeah, prelim decision fight. Now, I will point out one of my favorite fights of the year, Cody Stillen Rong Zhu, was like no one was expecting that to be legendary, and it might be in my running for fight of the year. So do want to point out, don't judge these prelim fights like I'm judging them. There's always a potential for them to be good, but we're going to pick Gaston Bolanos because we freaking can. I can do whatever I want. I'm him, not actually. Praise Jesus. Moving on to the women's strawweight division. Here we go. Ranked at positions here. Number 12 ranked, Jillian Robertson, taking on the number 9 ranked, Marina Rodriguez. Marina plus 260. Wow, Jillian minus 325. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought? Marina 17-5-2. Jillian 15-8. 5'6-5'5. Marina has 1 inch in height and 2 inches in reach. 65-63. Orthodox stance for both of our fighters. Marina, the underdog, ranked at number 9. It's just been a tough go, and I can't even believe she's 38. It kind of breaks my heart. She's gotten up there in age, but I mean, this woman has just been fighting with the UFC since 2018, while fought on Dana White's Contender Series, and she's ran into some tough stuff, you know, multiple draws to start out her career, a bad decision against Carlos Esparza in 2020, which she did not lose. I stand by that. Went on an incredible four-fight winning streak that unfortunately got standing TKO'd against Amanda Lemos. That is the only time she's been finished in her career, I do want to say, and that was an early stoppage. I stand by that. Now, as for the 8 finishes throughout the rest of her career, you know, I mean, she was able to get one over Michelle Waterson in September of 2023, but she dropped a decision of Virna Jandidova from grappling. She dropped a split decision to Jessica Andrade, where the grappling made the difference, and she dropped a decision in October to Yasmin Lucindo, which happened because of the grappling. So I do want to preface, she is 1-4. 3 of those are close decisions. The last 2 are literally split decisions. So I do want to point that out and preface that with Maria Rodriguez. But the grappling has been her issue throughout her UFC career. And it doesn't get much better as she takes on a pure grappler in Jillian Robertson, 29 years old from Canada, which is why they maybe threw her on this card. I don't know. She now lives and trains out of Florida on a 3-fight winning streak. 11 of her 15 wins by finish. Love that. 2 KOs, 9 subs. Of her 8 losses, she's only been finished twice. Currently on a 3-fight winning streak, and she's actually 5-1 in her last 6. I mean, she's been doing pretty good. Big win over Liliana Pinheiro in November. Got a win over Michelle Watson Gomez in June. Had an insane domination of Poliana Viana in January. I mean, the Pierre Rodriguez win, the Maria Agapova win. She's gotten some good wins so far in her UFC tenure. And, you know, she just ran into some tough people. Talia Santos, Miranda Maverick, Macy Barbara, Mara Bueno Silva, Tabitha Ritchie. Yeah. So, Jillian Robertson, 29 years old, entering the prime of her career. Some would even argue she's in the prime of her career. She's going to grapple Jillian Robertson's going to grapple Marina Rodriguez to death, and Jillian Robertson is going to be your victor. That's my prediction. I just highlighted Marina Rodriguez, which now I actually have to change my notes. This is what happens when I do stuff on paper. Let me just tell you, no, we're crossing off Marina. No, we are not doing Marina. We are picking Jillian Robertson. That's our prediction. All right, moving on from the women. Is that our last women fight of the evening? No, it's not, actually. We go to the men's middleweight division next as Ryan Man of Steel Loader takes on Azamat Iron Bekov. What nicknames for these two? I absolutely love that. Ryan plus 310, Azamat Bekov minus 400. Ryan Man of Steel, 8-1. Azamat Iron, 19-3. 6'2 to 6'. Ryan Loader's got the advantage. And in the reach, 76-72, he's also got the advantage. Southpaw for Ryan, Orthodox for Azamat Bekov. I just like that name, Azamat Bekov. Ryan Loader, 33 years old from California, currently on a 5-fight winning streak. 5 knockouts in his career of his 8 career victories. He was actually supposed to fight Cody Brundage on March 1st, but that fight fell apart. But this man did win the Ultimate Fighter season 32, I think we're on. Got a round 2 TKO over Robert Valentine. Absolutely dominated him. It was nothing even close. So, Ryan, good grappler. That's what he does best. It's what he's been doing so far through the Ultimate Fighter and in his UFC debut. Getting his first fight since August, good for him. Now, his opponent, Azamat Bekov, 29 years old, from Russia, on a 7-fight winning streak, 15 of his 19 fights, he has finished 7 KOs, 8 subs. He's only ever been submitted once of his 3 defeats, and he was actually a champion in LFA. He made his debut in January on short notice against Zachary Reese, and he dominated him. TKO'd him in just about 3 minutes. Now, people were saying shots to the back of the head. Yes, I agree. But when someone is curled up on the ground and you're trying to hit the side of their head, you're bound to hit the back of your head. I honestly think that was the issue going on. So that's what Azamat Bekov was running into with that. I think he's a powerhouse. I truly do. And honestly, I don't know the ceiling for Ryan Loader. This is going to tell me which one of these guys is actually good and which one of these guys isn't good. Now, Ryan Loader, he won the Ultimate Fighter. People think he's pretty good, but the days of winning the Ultimate Fighter and being good are kind of over. I mean, honestly, look at Ricky Tercios. Look at Kurt Holleball. Look at Brad Katona. You can even bring up Muhammad Usman. Like, these guys haven't done anything. Juliana Miller won, for goodness sakes, and she's 4-3. So, Ryan Loader, this will be a huge test for him, but unfortunately, I don't think he's going to pass it. And I think Azamat Bekov, hailing from the motherland of Russia, gets it done. And I'm even going to go with little round one. TKO. That is right. Give me Azamat Bekov. Okay, call me a commie, all can I say, but I am riding with the Russian over the American. Getting into our final prelim of the evening, we head to the women's bantamweight division as we have the number 10 ranked Yana Santos taking on the number 12 ranked Misha Cupcake Tate. Yana 15-8 with one no contest. Misha Tate 20-9. Wow, 30th professional fight for Misha Tate. 5'6 for both women, 68 inches in reach to 65, 3 inches for Yana. Orthodox stance for both of these ladies. Used to be Yana Kunitskaya until she married Tiago Santos. Fun fact. Yana is the plus 120 underdog. Misha Tate at minus 140 is just the slightest of favorites. Yana, 35 years old from Russia. 8 knockouts, or actually 7 knockouts, 1 submission. So 8 finishes in her 15 career wins. And also, of her 8 losses, she's been finished 5 times. 3 by knockout and 2 by sub. She was in jeopardy of losing her UFC contract. She was on a 3-fight losing streak, all of them just one-sided, before she ran into Chelsea Chandler in August and was hand-given a win. I mean, I was, you know, before I watched Chelsea Chandler take on what's her face, Jocelyn Edwards. I was like, you know what? Maybe Yana Santos is back. Maybe she's back, but really, she's not. And she came into the UFC with so much potential. They actually had her debut at the UFC 222 main event, taking on Chris Cyborg. She was finished in 3 minutes and 25 seconds, just to give you a bit of just what you need to know about Yana Santos. But they've always thought highly of her. No, she's beaten the lesser of people. She's unlost people like Aston Ladd, Irene Aldana, Carol Rosa. So Yana, is she back? I don't know. This is a very good matchup for her to win, but we'll have to see as she takes on Misha Cupcake Take. 38 years old from Washington, the state. 4 knockouts and 8 subs. Give her 12 of 20 career victories by finish, and 5 of her 9 losses have came by finish. So, you know, she doesn't go too many decisions, but still a decent amount. This is Misha Tate's second run in the UFC. Of course, she came from Strikeforce. She was a champion. She beat Holly Holm. She then lost to Amanda Nunes. She had a good run. Truly had a good run, and then retired for 5 years, from 2016 to 2021, after dropping a decision to Hakua Pentin. Comes back, it's a performance of the night finish over Marianne Renault, loses a unanimous decision to Ketlin Vieira, then loses a unanimous decision to Lauren Murphy, which was just outrageous. Then in December, took on Juliana Vila, just ran through her. That was in 2023, actually. That was in 2023 for Misha Tate. Dominator there, and now she finds herself back here. And honestly, I was going to pick Yana Santos, but I can't help myself. Misha Tate isn't around that much longer. I'm going to go with Cupcake Misha Tate. I think she's better looking. I think she's better grappling. And I don't even know if these two women can strike. I honestly don't really know that. So I guess we'll see from this fight if they still got what it takes to throw down in the hands department, if you will. But that's our final prelim right there. Let's get into this star-studded main card. I mean, I can't even begin. Where do we begin with the first fight on UFC, the Des Moines main card? I mean, I can't even believe this is real. I don't know how he wound back up here. But you got Jeremy Lil Heathen Stevens back in this mother truck. And that's right. He's taking on Mason the Dragon Jones. I mean, two guys who I never thought would come back to the UFC are now back. Mason, minus 575. Jeremy, plus 425. Yeah. Yeah. Big odds difference here, but legendary guys. Jeremy Stevens, 28-19 with one no contest, has the most losses in UFC history. I think it's 17. It's either 17, 18, or 19. It's up there. It's a lot. It's a lot more than it should be, if I'm being honest. But hey, he's back. We love it. Mason Jones, 15-2. With no contest, completely has revitalized his career. 5'10 to 5'9, 1 inch in height for Mason, 3 inches in reach for Mason, 74-71. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Starting off with Jeremy Stevens, the underdog, 38 years old, born in Des Moines, Iowa. I mean, come on. Come on, he's from Des Moines. We don't got many Des Moines fighters on here. He's from Des Moines. Now lives in California. 21 of his 29 victories have came by finish, 18 KOs and 3 subs. 8 8 of his 19 losses, he has been finished in 3 KOs and 5 subs, which honestly isn't too bad. Jeremy, obviously, you know, was a savage for a long time. I mean, this guy was fighting in the UFC. Guess when? 2007, for goodness sakes. He had a decent run at the top, you know, got some big wins here and there. And then after finishing Josh Emmett in 2018, proceeded to get finished by Jose Aldo, have to fight Prime Zabit Magomed Sharipov, have to fight Yair Rodriguez, would lose, then would lose a fight of the night decision to him, then would get finished by Calvin Kattar, then lose to Matheus Gamrot, and now he is back. But you may be like, oh, so Jeremy Stephens hasn't fought since July 2021. You would be wrong. He has gone on 1-2 in the PFL, right? He went 1-2 in the PFL, you know, didn't do too out there. Then had a boxing bout with Jose Aldo, had a draw there. Then dropped a decision in boxing, then won a decision in boxing, then went to Bare Knuckle FC and went 3-0. Jeremy Stephens has been active. My boy has been active in the MMA realm, not in the UFC, but in the MMA realm. And when we look at the last five guys he's lost to, I mean, Yair Rodriguez, title shots. Calvin Kattar was a top guy main eventing. Matheus Gamrot, top tenner in the lightweight division. Zabit Magomedsharipov would probably be the best featherweight on the planet had he not had heart issues. Jose Aldo, that speaks for itself, if you ask me. And the guys he's beaten, Josh Emmett, Gilbert Melendez, Du Hu Choi, Henan Burrell, I mean, legends of the game. Don't sleep on little heathens, Jeremy Stephens. He's an absolute dog. His opponent, Mason Jones, 30 years old from Wales, is currently on a 4-fight winning streak. Well, you look at that 4-fight winning streak for little Mason Jones. I wrote a note here. I don't know what it says. On this win streak, he's had 3 knockouts. That was what my little note was I wrote here. Of his 15 wins, he's gotten 10 finishes, 7 KOs, 3 subs. He's never been finished in both of his defeats. Came in, debuted in the UFC in 2021, lost a fight of the night to Mike Davis, then had a no contest against Alan Patrick, then actually beat David Onama in 2021. Last fight in the UFC was 2022, took on Ludwig Klein, where it was a decision loss, and they cut him. I don't know what they did, but they just were not liking what they saw from Mason Jones. But Mason is back. He's on this little win streak. He's a whole new guy. And guys, I'm so torn on this. I actually am living in turmoil over this fight. You know, pretty much from here on out, I'm pretty much sold on all the guys I've picked here and there. But let me tell you, this one, I don't know. Am I going to get the Jeremy Stephens of old, the Bare Knuckle FC Jeremy Stephens? Or am I going to get the Jeremy Stephens who is losing to guys left, right, and center? So if you're asking me, he hasn't been in the UFC in a while. He's in Des Moines. It's just, I just don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. I'm going to go Mason Jones. I'm going to give in to the minus almost 600 favorite Mason Jones. And honestly, I kind of like you, Mason Jones, but it'd be so fun to pick Jeremy Stephens, but we're picking with our mind, not with our heart here. Moving from the lightweight division to the men's bantamweight division, Cameron the what? The babyface killer, smaller man. Okay, Cameron. The babyface killer, interesting nickname, takes on Sirhei Sidhe. Cameron, 12-4. Sirhei, 11-2. 5'11 to 5'9. Sirhei is 2 inches in height and 3 inches in reach. Switch stance for Sirhei, orthodox for Cameron Smotherman. Cameron at plus 115 is the underdog. Sirhei, minus 135 is the slightest of favorites. Cameron Smotherman coming into this one, 27 years old from Houston, is currently on a 4-fight winning streak. 7 of his 12 wins have came by finish, 6 KOs and 1 sub. And of his 4 defeats, he's been knocked out twice. He actually fought on Davis Contreras series in 2023, where Charlampis Griogio knocked him out in a minute, exactly on the dot, 60 seconds. He would then step in short notice in October, taking on Jake Hadley, whom he would beat, which was very good for Cameron Smotherman. So Cameron basically got Jake Hadley cut from the UFC, honestly. I kind of forgot about that. So clearly he's talented, but like I said, kind of unknown. You know, he was fighting in some other promotions. Now he's on a little win streak, and now he takes on Sirhei Sidhe in his second UFC fight. 28 years old from Canada. He has 7 KOs and 1 sub of his 11 victories. He's never been finished of his 2 defeats. Him and Ramon Tavares had a little saga from September 2023 to January 2024, but then he finally got an opponent besides him in Garrett Armfield in November. He was able to avoid the grappling of Garrett Armfield, use some submission attempts and some striking to get the victory in that one. This is a very close matchup, if you ask me. It's a coin flip for me. It's really a coin flip, and I know Cameron Smotherman is good, but something's just speaking to me, saying Sirhei Sidhe is going to win, so I'm going to stick with Sirhei Sidhe. Honestly, Cameron Smotherman go out, get a knockout, Sirhei Sidhe get a submission. I don't know. This is unfortunately one of those fights where you're going to have to see from this. We're going to be looking at this fight to analyze who we pick in the next fight for both these guys. It's just unfortunately how that works, so we're going to pick Sirhei Sidhe. That's where we're riding with. Let's stick with the bantamweights, guys. We get a little ranked action here, I believe. I hope he's still in the rankings. Montel Jackson at number 15. Montel Quick Jackson taking on Daniel Soncora Marcos. Montel Jackson, 14-2. Daniel Marcos, 17-0. With one no contest, he's undefeated. 5'10 and 5'7, 3 inches in height for Montel. He's got 6 inches in reach, 75-69. Southpaw for Montel. Orthodox. Orthodox stands for Daniel Marcos, but Montel minus 200 is the favorite. Daniel Marcos plus 165 is the underdog. So Montel Jackson coming into this one, 5 fight winning streak, 33 years old from Milwaukee, 9 finishes in his 14 wins, not too bad. 8 KOs, 1 sub, never been finished in his 2 defeats. His defeats are to Brett Johns and Ricky Simone, but he used to be a bum. He also used to be a bum. He was, what was he? He was 2-3-2 in the UFC, you know, wasn't really doing much. And then eventually just kind of got this confidence, knocked out Jesse Strader, beat JP Byes, beat Julio Arce, finished Ronnie Yaha, finished Demont Blackshear, all right, in last July. So been almost a year since he last fought, but guess how long it took him? 19 seconds. 19 seconds it took him to beat Demont Blackshear. Insane. Insane. And if you don't know, we actually watched him on Blackshear fight last week, and he looked pretty good. So Montel coming in with a lot of momentum. He's been fantastic. 5-0 over his last 5. You could even point out that in the UFC, I mean, he's freaking, what is it, 9-2. That's a pretty impressive UFC record. Very high on Montel Jackson. It just so happens he's taking on an undefeated fighter, though. Daniel Marcos, 32 years old from Peru, now lives in Florida. Actually, I wonder if him and Gaston Bolanos both came over from Peru. I don't know. But 8 knockouts of his 17 wins, so decision machine. And yeah, he's undefeated. He's gone 4-0 with a no contest in the UFC. He's gotten one finish. Last time he fought, beat Adrian Yanez in December. Well, split decision. And I've been waiting for this prediction because we all know undefeated fighters are falling like flies. And I don't think Daniel Marcos has the killer mindset that Montel Jackson does. And plus, I really like Montel Jackson. So I'm picking Montel Jackson to get a round 2 knockout because he's Montel Quick Jackson. Heck yes. Should be competitive, though. We'll see if Daniel Marcos is as good as people think he is. This is just another test, unfortunately. A lot of test fights here. There are test fights up and down this card. Probably besides the main event, everything's a test fight or two veterans fighting each other. So we'll see what happens there, but I am going to pick Montel Jackson. Speaking of veterans fighting, we're just on this rotation of age welterweights fighting each other. And right now, we get Santiago Ponzinibbio, the Argentine dagger, taking on D-Rod Daniel Rodriguez. Minus 120 for Santiago, plus 100 for Daniel Rodriguez. Yeah, this is just another combo of two guys that are just like, oh, these are two old welterweights. Let's just have them fight. And everyone's like, sure, let's do it. Santiago, 31-8, will be fighting in his 40th professional fight. Daniel Rodriguez, 18-5, has just around half of that. 6'1 to 6'. Daniel, 1 inch there. 74-73 for Daniel as well. In the reach, orthodox for Santiago. Southpaw for Daniel. They're pretty similar. They're pretty similar guys here. Santiago probably has had a more star-studded UFC career than Daniel. 38 years old from Argentina, but now lives in Florida. Of his 31 victories, he has had 23 finishes, 17 KOs, and 6 subs. And of his 8 losses, he's been knocked out 4 times. Santiago was at one point on a 7-fight win streak. He was literally the man putting Neil Magny's lights out cold. Then just ran into injuries. And COVID hit. Then he just couldn't get a fight and finally comes back into Li Jingliang and loses. Is then able to re-get the magic with a win over Miguel Beza. That's to take on Jeff Neal, Michelle Barra. Actually loses very close split decisions to them. Has a crazy comeback against Alex Morono, and then Kevin Holland puts his lights out. Pretty humbling. Then Muslim Salikov beats him by split decision. Aussie didn't think he lost that. Then he comes back in January of this year, and lo and behold, finishes Carlson Harris in a comeback win. It was actually kind of impressive. Wins it with just under 2 minutes left in round number 3. So Santiago coming in with some momentum. He's an ageless wonder. We love him. It's just kind of one of those what could have, would have, should have in the UFC realm. If, you know, he hadn't gotten hurt, if COVID hadn't happened, it's kind of sad to think about, but he's here. He's coming off of not just a win, a knockout. So good for Santiago Ponzinibbio. His opponent, Daniel Rodriguez, also 38, now lives in California. 8 KOs and 4 subs make up his, 18 career victories for D-Rod. Pretty nice, if you ask me. And of his defeats, he's been knocked out once and submitted once of his 5 losses. So Daniel came into the UFC, was on a little win streak, ran to Nicholas Dalby, lost. Then went on a 4-fight losing streak, ran into Neil Magny. then ran into Ian Gary, then ran into Calvin Gastelum. Well, finally, they give him Alex Morono, and he beats him in October. So both these guys coming in off of some wins, I'm going to be honest, in the battle of who is a more aged average welterweight on the planet, I'm going with Santiago Ponzinibbio. I just like him. I like him more. Plus, he's in EA Sports UFC 5. No, who's not? Daniel Rodriguez. Daniel Rodriguez ain't in EA Sports UFC 5. And there's actually at one point, Daniel Rodriguez beat Mike Perry up badly on a ABC broadcasted UFC event. And people really thought he was going to skyrocket to the moon. And then Neil Magny just humbled the living daylights out of him. So Daniel, he's got a lot of tattoos. He's got some face tattoos. He's got like 1989 tattooed across his front chest. I think it's his birth year. I don't know. But yeah. We're riding with the Argentinian dagger in Santiago Ponzinibbio. I almost just said Nirate, but yeah, Santiago Ponzinibbio is our prediction. We're going to go decision. We're going to go with the decision. Then, ladies and gentlemen, the top two hitters, you get a good co-main event, you get a good main event. Let's start with the co-main event. This one's tricky. Rainer frickin' Day Ritter taking on Bo Nickel. That is right. Rainer Day Ritter, the number 13 ranked middleweight in the world, is back, and he's taking on Bo Nickel. Rainer Day Ritter. Quickly getting fights left, right, and center. RDR, you know, he's coming in. He's the underdog, plus 260. Bo Nickel, minus 325, is the favorite. He's 7-0. Rainer's 19-2. 6'4 to 6'1, 3 inches in height for Rainer. 78 to 76, 2 inches in reach for Rainer. Southpaw for both of these gentlemen. It's just going to be interesting. It really is. Now, Rainer's 34. He's from the Netherlands. He's on a little three-fight winning streak. He's actually really good. 17 of his 19 wins have came by finish. 3 KOs, 14, keyword 14 subs. He's a big submission artist. And both of his losses came to Anatoly Makhalov in ONE Championship FC, where he was a double freaking champion in middleweight and light heavyweight. So, Rainer Day Ritter, we clearly know he's good. I think it just comes down to Bo Nickel. You know, he's young. 29, he used to be young, you know, 29 is getting up there in age, but from Penn State, from Pennsylvania, you know, 6 of his 7 wins by finish, it's just going to be interesting what we see here, because through Rainer's first two fights, the fight against Jerome Mearshart, such a feeler out fight, then he took on Kevin Holland, and he used the grappling, got a finish, but it's Kevin Holland can't grapple, for goodness sakes. And as for Bo Nickel, you know, he had so much momentum, 6-0, all of them finishes, all of them in round one, and then Cody Brundage, UFC 300. Oh, he can't get him out of there in round two. Then takes on Paul Craig, and it was so boring. Like, it looked like a sparring match. Now, Bo Nickel, I thought, won every round. I honestly thought neither of the guys did enough, and you're just like, you should just give it to Bo Nickel. But it was kind of just like, open our eyes, like, okay, maybe there are levels to this. So, Bo Nickel liked the win. He was very humble about it. He thought it was a good win because it really showed that he can go the distance, which honestly is a healthy mindset, really a good healthy mindset, Bo Nickel. I'm just troubled because Bo Nickel, like, shouldn't be green anymore. He's been fighting now for 3 years, so I think he's ready. This is a very hand-selected fight. I honestly thought he should have gotten someone like Paulo Costa, Brendan Allen, Michelle Barrera, I thought was someone for a time, even Anthony Hernandez, Roman Dolidze, but things have changed. He's now taking on Rainer Day Ritter, and I'm not hopping off the Bo Nickel hype train yet. You know, if it dies here with Rainer Day Ritter, I will probably be a bit sad that I didn't pick Rainer, but we're not dying. We're not hopping off the Bo Nickel train. I think he's going to get a surprise knockout win even. You know, I saw Rainer eat some punches against Gerald, and you know what? He can get rattled. He really can get rattled. So we're going to pick Bo Nickel. We're going with a little round two. Ooh, should we go round two submission? I don't know. We might go round two and round one submission, but we're going to back Bo Nickel. We're gonna stick with him. And then we get to the main event, ladies and gentlemen. Love this fight. The number 4 ranked and number 5 ranked bantamweights on the planet, Corey the Sandman Hagen and Davison Dels de Guerra, God of War. Figure eight. Love it. Love it. Corey Sandhagen, 17-5, is coming in as the minus 500 favorite. I mean, what? Davison Figueiredo, 24-4-1, plus 380. It makes no sense. It makes no sense why the odds are like this, guys. This fight is so close. This is a plus 100, minus 120 type of odds fight. I have no idea why Corey Sandhagen is such a big favorite. It's actually really concerning. 6 inches in height for Sandhagen, 5'11 to 5'5 might help with that, but what do I know? 70-inch reach to 68-inch, 2 inches for Corey. Switch stance for Sandhagen, orthodox for Figueiredo. So this is pretty even. I thought this was pretty even of a matchup here. You know, you're going to see a mix of striking and grappling. Could be very competitive. Sandhagen is 33 years old from Colorado. 7 KOs and 3 subs give him 10 of 17 wins by finish. And he's only ever been finished once his entire UFC career. And let me just read you the last guys he's lost to. Umar Nurmagomedov, Piotr Jan, TJ Dillashaw, Aljamain Sterling. So this guy only beats the best. Last win was over Rob Font in August of 2023. And the Umar fight in August was just, you know, it was tough. It was tough. Watching Umar take him down again and again and hold him down and beat on him, it sucked. It sucked, but I think he learned from this. I think Sandhagen learns what to do and what not to do, and he'll be back. And 33 years old, he's still kicking it. He's still kicking. He's been in the UFC since 2018. He's a fighter, man. He is a fighter. He's super fun, action-packed. When he can be action-packed, he's action-packed. He needs to bring back a highlight reel knockout. He had, like, back-to-back in 2020, and now it's just been kind of decision after decision after decision. His opponent, Devinson Figueiredo, 37. How is Figgy 37? The plus 380 underdog from Brazil. 18 of 24 wins by finish, 9 knockouts, 9 subs. And he's only ever been finished once by knockout, once by sub in his 4 losses. And they're both to Brandon freaking Moreno. So that says a lot if you ask me too. Figueiredo, been in the UFC since 2017. One of the greatest flyweight champions we've ever seen. The first ever tetralogy fight with Brandon Moreno. 4 straight fights. Came to bantamweight, knocked out Rob Font. I mean, knocked off Rob Font. Cody Garbrandt and Marlon Vera. Became the first man to ever drop Marlon Vera. Then ran into Piotr Jan in China. And Piotr Jan just humbled his ass. You just already know. So that's just how it's been for Piotr Jan. If he hasn't lost to anyone that hasn't been a former champion in the last, gosh, I don't even know, was it? Since he has last non-Brandon Moreno or freaking Piotr Jan loss. So this is really close. This is a really close matchup. Don't let the odds fool you, but I'll tell you what the odds are doing. They're making me want to pick Corey Sandhagen. I can't even lie. And honestly, when I do think about it, Corey Sandhagen fights a distance striking fight. And if he can avoid the takedowns of Figueiredo and even the power shots, I think he'll find success. So we are going to rock with Corey Sandhagen. I'm going to have to go with a decision. It's such a toss-up of what fight you're going to get. Look at Carlos Prates and Gary. Perfect example. We thought that was going to be a very good fight. And there were some moments where overall it was very stale. It was very stale. We then go the weekend before that, you know, you got a little Sean Brady, Leon Edwards. Kind of bad, but you get a finish, which is really good. And then, obviously, the utter magic that was UFC 314. So, it's always hit or miss, but I think this will be good. We're going to go with Corey Sandhagen. This event looks good. Only 12 fights. I'm rocking with a lot of these people, but yes, those are our predictions for UFC Des Moines, Iowa. So, ladies and gentlemen, check it out. Let me know what you're thinking, and let's make it a great weekend. Like I said, my time here at college comes to an end in 10 days, and, you know, people say, like, oh, it hasn't really set in. You know, it's set in for me. I live every day to the fullest. I'm so appreciative of the present. God has blessed me so much. I try and not dwell on the sadness in life of things moving on. Because, you know, the best things are always ahead. The best things are always ahead in life. So just look forward to the good things that come in the future and appreciate things you have in the present, like your family, your loved ones, of course, Jesus Christ. Amen, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you didn't know, I will catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast. I say it every single time. And honestly, as I leave my college career, I'm ready to take this thing to the moon. I'm ready to make this podcast the best freaking podcast out there, guys. So you take care. You stay safe. And I'll see you next time.